Hi, and here we are again, Kim West and Lucy Miller. And in this segment, when we're talking about sensory processing disorder, I have some really basic questions, Dr. Miller, that I bet you a lot of other parents have. And that is, you know, what is occupational therapy? It's always confusing to me, especially when we're talking about children.
Yeah, I think that term is a little misleading for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But it comes from the fact that what we do is we treat everyday, what's called everyday occupations. So if somebody asked me what my occupations are, I would say I'm a researcher, I'm a therapist, but I'm also a mother, I'm a sewer, I sew things, I love to sew, I love to weave. You know, those are my occupations. They're the things that make meaning in your life. Mm-hmm. So think about what are the things that are meaningful for children and what comes to mind for you as meaningful activities for children?
Play,
of course, but also sleep.
Yeah, sleep
eating.
And, you know, eating and,
yes.
You know, being loved and nurtured.
Exactly, and having friends
and being
a good family. Yeah. And in a really broad sense, that's what occupation means.
Mm-hmm.
So an occupational therapist is someone that helps you maximize or get the most out of your everyday occupations.
Mm-hmm.
And so in pediatrics, we are usually working with children who have issues at home or at school or in community life. And we're trying to get more of a balance in the family with the child having their needs met somehow. We also, of course, we try to change how the brain is functioning and how behaviors are. But the reason it's called occupational therapy goes back to that meaning of occupation.
Mm-hmm. That makes much more sense. And so when, you know, when we talk about SPD being assessed and treated by an occupational therapist, is there specialized training that you do for OTs who may not be trained in working with SPD, or does a parent look for an OT who has a special certification in it? Or,
you know, those are really, really good questions, because I just think the field is extremely confusing. Even when you're inside, it's confusing. There is a thing called certification in sensory integration, and what that refers to is certification in a certain test, and the test name is Sensory Integration and Praxis Test. That is a test that Dr. Ayers developed, and that was published in 1989, so it's, you know, been out on the market quite a long time. And certification is run by a certain set of people, and they do a very good job in training, but it's certification in administration of the test and interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
It is not overall global certification in sensory processing disorder. Chances are that somebody who is certified also has other courses that they've taken and is a person who knows a lot about sensory processing disorder in general, but it's good to check that out. And it's also good for parents to know that just because a person is not certified in that test does not mean they're not good.
Mm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that what you really need to ask is, how many years have you worked with children with this disorder? How many children have you worked with? Who, you know, if they've only worked with a few, or if they've only worked in the school system, then you know you're getting a different level of training than, let's say, somebody who has attended a mentorship or who has a lot of advanced training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know how it is in your field, Kim, but
mm-hmm.
Do you have, like, advanced training in sleep?
No, I'm a family therapist by training, so of course
mm-hmm.
I know about behavioral modification and working in family dynamics and working with children and parents. And there is not. There is growing, you know, it's a growing field, and that's why
mm-hmm.
I now am training other coaches and bringing in outside experts. But there is not yet.
So in a way, your field is kind of like our field. People really have to be independent, and they have to ask the right questions to find out if somebody who says they're trained in sensory processing or somebody who says they're trained in sleep, what does that mean? Who did they train with, and for how long?
Exactly. And those are very important questions that I encourage parents to ask when they're looking for someone to help them with their child's sleep. And I guess it would be the same for an occupation, really anyone that you bring your child to.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So then, okay, so let's say we hear about and we interview or meet a really fabulous OT, as they're called. What does the treatment of SPD look like?
Well, there again, it's going to be very different by different people. But I'd like to tell you what I think is sort of the gold standard of treatment so that your people who are listening can know about that and they can look for that. And that is someone who is very well-rounded in the treatment of sensory processing disorder. And by that, I mean they don't just look at sensory. They look at the whole child, and actually the child in the context of the family. So at our center, at STAR Center, what we do is we do a very thorough assessment of the child, and the assessment includes standardized tests. Those are tests with scores at the end, and also clinical tests, which are more observational. And at the end of that, we do at least an hour feedback session with the parents so they understand what the findings are. Mm-hmm. Following that, we do yet another one-hour session with the parents if they decide to start treatment, which we call our goal writing session. And this is very important for treatment because if you don't know what your goals are, how can you treat the child? And the goals really need to be based on parent priorities, not on therapist's priorities. And it's a very important principle. It kind of goes along with our treatment model, which is very heavily based on parent coaching, parent education, parent training. So in our model, what we do is one out of every five sessions is parents only, and the parents are educated and trained because we believe in intensive short-term treatment here. So we see the children either 5 days a week or 3 days a week, at the least 3 days a week, and over a much shorter time period than is typical. I don't know about you, but I hear about kids who have been in OT for years. And, you know, I just don't believe in that. The kids need to get what they need, and then they need to go into the normal community or typical community and play. So we try to boost them by doing intensive therapy. And what does a therapy look like? It looks like play. It is play. If you are doing exercises or if you are doing some kind of passive stimulation to the child, there's a very big effort on the part of some people to have everybody in the world brushing their child with a special magic brush, you know. And that's a very passive thing to do. It's much better if the therapy is active and the child is interacting with the therapist and and playing in a very active manner.
Just one other thing
yeah, that I wanted to kind of bring up that I left out or I haven't said so far, and that is that in the model that we use, the real foundation of treatment, rather than being sensory, is arousal regulation so that the child is in a good place in therapy. They're modulated, they're regulated, and relationships and engagement. So that if we can get the child to a place where the parent understands how to keep them regulated, then we are in a place that is so much better than when the child came to us. And we try to train the parents, number one, how to get them there, and number two, what kinds of activities to do to help the child once they get there.
Okay. So it, let me just clarify. So then there's a lot of it is sort of exercises.
You know what? Here's the thing. If you go to an OT that's not very well trained, it will look like exercises. But if you go to somebody who's really well trained, it will look like play. In fact, people looking through a one-way mirror might not even think you're doing therapy. They might think you're just playing with the child.
Uh-huh.
That's how you get the child to engage in things that are hard for them, is that they're making a castle, or they're on a spaceship trip, or they're on a camping trip or something, and they're playing whatever it is that they need to do to increase their developmental skill level.
I think that's very important for parents to know that, because I think a lot of them are afraid, like, oh, is this, like, involved medicine? Is this going to be anything that hurts the child?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that it's play with, you know, movement, I gather, that's reassuring.
Yes, it's lots of movement and lots of tactile stimulation. So one example, you might be in a room that has running water, a sink with running water, and you have shaving cream and you're playing find the animals in the snowbank or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If a child is tactile defensiveness and they're over-responsive to touch, you're not going to go in there and just assault them with some tactile materials. You have to kind of hide it inside of a game.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah. I like that. That's wonderful, and I think that's very reassuring.
Mhm.
And so that's interesting as a parent to think about. So my child playing these games, sort of like play therapy. I understand as a therapist how play therapy works.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain to the parents listening, you know, sort of how that works with sensory processing disorder? Is there, or maybe a better way to say it, is there evidence that OT is effective with SPD?
Well, actually, those are kind of two different questions, and let me take both of them.
Okay.
The theory of how it works is that there's kind of, I had a neuroanatomy teacher one time when I was getting my master's who explained it this way. Inside your brain, you have kind of ruts in the road, like as if you're driving down a muddy road in a rainstorm. If your car goes the wrong way, the rut in the road goes the wrong direction, and it's like the impulse in your brain is taking the wrong fork in the road, and it gets deeper and deeper and deeper because it just keeps repeating. What we're trying to do in therapy is to get the impulse to go take the other fork, go in the direction it doesn't usually go, and to make sure that that becomes an automatic response, you have to do it over and over. It's repetition that changes those brain waves, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as evidence goes, there are a lot of articles out in the literature, but most of them do not have all the rigor that you really need to be able to show that OT is effective. Now, one exception to that is a study that we published in 2007. It's a randomized trial, and that means children were randomly put into either treatment with OT or treatment with a kind of a sham treatment, which was just an activity protocol where they played with an examiner, but there was no real therapy, versus a wait list. So there were three different conditions. And they lasted the same amount of time. So they had OT twice a week for 10 weeks, or they had this play group. It was individual play. Sorry, not a group, but playing with a trained adult, also twice a week, or they had wait list twice a week. And we found that the children who had OT improved more in the parent goals, their parent priorities, and also in social and cognitive skills. So it's not a huge study, and it's only one study, but it is a very important study because it suggests that occupational therapy with children who have this condition, sensory processing disorder, is effective. And so many people say, there's no evidence. And the fact of the matter is, there is evidence now, and so that is no longer a valid complaint. In fact, what I like to say to people is, that's so 80s when they say that to me, because in the 1980s there really was no evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But now there is actually not only our study, but several other studies as well.
That's very reassuring. I know that I have seen clients that I've referred to OTs to get evaluated for SPD, and they indeed do have it. And I see their sleep improve. It
Absolutely.
Takes a little while, of course, but it really does, and the parents are so thankful and grateful. And at that point, you just sort of feel like there doesn't need to be evidence because my child is the evidence.
Exactly. I mean, there are lots of stories, anecdotal evidence, where it has been helped. One of the reasons there's not more evidence is because it's very hard to get funded to do that kind of research. I have been trying for decades to get a large grant to do a bigger randomized trial, and what I get back when I turn in grants to the National Institutes of Health, which is where most people get funding from, is that they don't want to fund it because there's no such thing. And if there's no such thing, then they can't fund it. So why is there no such thing? Because it's not in the diagnostic manual, but that's a whole other question probably.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure it is. And it relates to insurance and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, good. So that's very, very helpful. Thank you for asking answering these very important questions, Dr. Miller.
Oh, well, you know, the truth is it's not answered yet, but we're well on the way to building a body of evidence. And so that it's not as if, and parents should really know this too, that it's not as if there's an answer, and the answer is yes, it works, or no, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is very much dependent on the family, the context, what the child's problems are, and who's working with them. So it's not a black and white kind of question, but at least people know there is some evidence that shows that treatment is effective.
Excellent. Thank you.